Man, there's nothing going on in this sleepy little one dog town.
Right. Run!
You must be kidding. There's so much going on every day. I have to make multiple hard decisions.
Do I go to this or go to that? You want to be everywhere all at once.
I knew you'd say that. And it's true. So we're going to get caught up on what's been happening.
And what's about to happen. It's a smorgasbord.
Next on Loving the Springs, where we celebrate the best of Manitou and Colorado Springs and elevate the rest.
You're listening to Studio 809 Podcasts. This is what community sounds like.
I'm Al Brody.
I'm Dave Gardner.
And I'm Carrie Simison. We're recording this episode on May 8th in Studio 809 Community Podcast Studio at the Next Us, a professional cooperative environment for small businesses in downtown Colorado Springs.
What's going on? You know, we never talk about us. Nobody knows how the three of us came together.
Because usually we have a guest.
But I think it's important. We're such an odd trio.
Speak for yourself.
I'm speaking for myself.
Yeah, so no guest today. So I guess that frees us up to, one, to catch up on things that we think are noteworthy in town. But also, yeah, we could
vocally wander a little bit.
Yeah, and let people get to know us a little bit, too. And on that front, wow, I was just blown away several weeks ago when I walked out the front door to pick up the newspaper. You know what I heard? At 7:30 in the morning, I heard kids laughing and shouting at each other. And I thought, wow, that's kind of early for them to be out playing. Well, it was several neighborhood kids convening on their bicycles and then heading down the street to school on their bicycles.
Did you have a flashback to like 1982?
Like 1962.
Right?
Yeah.
When it was much more normal.
Yes. Yeah. It used to happen all the time. And I've noticed they are riding their bikes to school every day. There are a few neighborhood kids that are on electric scooters. And I just thought, this is awesome because one, if their parents aren't driving them to school, less traffic congestion, less carbon emissions from burning the gas, and kids being outdoors and getting some exercise.
Early good habits.
Yeah.
Generation Wild, I heard from them this morning that kids on average spend about 7 hours a day in front of screens, and it was less than 10 minutes a day outdoors.
Wow.
I would think it's even higher than 7 hours a day. Everybody, and it's not just kids, we are locked into these phones. It's
yeah.
Incredible.
But less than 10 minutes outdoors, that's just...
That is sad.
Yeah.
Especially where we live. I mean, it's a tragedy wherever, but when you can go outside in our 300 days of sunshine with the view of that mountain, yeah.
That's why I'm a proponent of pump tracks. They are the thing in new communities that get one that is bringing kids out in droves.
Yeah, the neighboring kids have built a little ramp in their yard.
There you go.
And one more thing in their praise, none of them are on e-bikes. And you know our hill, they have to work a little bit to ride
legs.
Home.
Yeah.
You do have a hill.
Yeah. So bravo for that. I'd like to see more of that.
The last time I filled up with gas and it was $4.59 a gallon or whatever it was, I thought, my gosh, why am I in my car? Especially with as short of commute as I have for my daily work. It was one of those, you know, moments where I'm like, you're kind of an idiot. You don't need to spend $10 on 2 gallons of gas when you're going to work 2.5 miles away.
I've wondered that about these kids. Are these kids riding their bikes to school because of the price of gas? I kind of hope that's not what it is, but if that is what it is,
we'll take it as a catalyst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are some good things coming from when people have to pay $4 or $5 a gallon for gas. They might think about getting in that car and running down to La Casita for a burrito. We love La Casita, but ride your bike down there.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of bikes.
Is it Bike to Work Day coming up?
I'm excited about that.
I think you are. So tell us about it, Dave.
Well, it's June 24th, and you know, I'm kind of excited that I'm more than a month away and thinking about Bike to Work Day. And, well, what is Bike to Work Day?
Bike to Work Day is a day set aside to encourage people to try riding their bike to and from work to get people out of cars. That's what it was intended for. That's why we had a mayor's ride, was if the mayor did it, everybody else doesn't have an excuse.
And several of our mayors over the years have participated.
Started with Lionel Rivera because I made him. Or I encouraged him. I didn't make him do anything.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, and then it came to an abrupt halt with Mayor Bach because he refused to ride, absolutely. And then Yemi has done both. He's ridden and he participates.
Mayor Southers did too, didn't he?
He did.
Mayor Southers did it every year, yes. And his wife.
Yeah, I would just wonder whether he rode back home from work because he has to ride up that same hill.
Can neither confirm nor deny, but he rode to work.
Yeah.
And it's bike to work day.
It's super attractive to ride to work. I mean, it's awesome to just be outside. You notice things that you never notice when you're driving. You know, you're not having to pay $5 a gallon for gas. But they've made it more attractive. How?
All across the city, there are breakfast stations. Yeah. So you can check out your route to work and they're plugged in on a map and you can see which one or two or 12 breakfast stations you want to stop by on the way. And they're everything from some of them will have kind of a simple granola bar and a cup of coffee. Some of them go all out and make pancakes and bacon. A lot of times there's activities and sponsors with swag giveaways, people that ride regularly as commuters and really there to answer questions and really kind of help talk about, you know, why you should consider doing it more than just one day a year.
And Dave has this hankering to host a spot.
Yeah, and we're not announcing that it's happening for sure, but we're leaning in that direction. I'm trying to get a few more podcasters on board to help with that. But we've got this beautiful patio right outside the studio.
And it would highlight Studio 809's location.
Yeah, it's right on Cascade. Alan Beauchamp, I ran into him the other day, and he said, wow, that's a superb location. You guys should do that.
As he would say to any location.
Right. And if you're hanging out on our patio, you get a front and center view of Pikes Peak with your cup of coffee. So
that's true.
Yeah. So we're thinking that we might do a breakfast station here and move the studio down there and live stream recorded episode of Loving the Springs and maybe bring in Tori Giffen from the Buffalo Lodge where she'll be doing a bike station. We can bring her in remotely for part of the podcast and other podcasters could remote in. And we might even invite Alan to do that from wherever Trails and Open Space is doing.
And there are several locations not far from here. So with a little bit of riding, you can go visit several stations.
And my thinking is that we'll have a full buffet.
Crab legs.
Omelets to order.
Okay, Dave.
No. If we do it, we'll be providing coffee and something good to eat and really great company. And that's on June 24th. And even if we don't do it, you should get your bike tuned up, get your quads tuned up, and plan on enjoying that morning.
We'll drop a link in the show notes where you can find all the information. And they do like you to register just so they know kind of how many people are participating. But it is free to participate and lots of options as far as where to stop.
Yes.
June 24th.
It's like, and I can't wait because I love bikes. I collect them. So it's kind of like picking out an outfit for the day. Like, which bike do I get to take to Bike to Work Day this year?
Wow, you and Al have a lot in common.
Notice her mug matches her shirt.
Whoa.
We're talking serious stuff here.
Who has more bicycles, Carrie or Al?
I'm going to vote for me.
I'll bet.
Probably.
Just in the past few months, there's been a few new acquisitions. So.
I think I'm up to 6 bikes and a bike ride station at the end of my driveway.
Wow.
I just can't give them up. Like, I have 2 roadies, but I'm emotionally attached to the first one.
Of course.
Like, I don't want to sell it. It's not worth money to sell it, and I have an emotional attachment, so I'd rather just keep it.
You know, I think a lot of Coloradans can relate to this. I had a high of 26, and then I downsized. But it's hard for me to count because some have 4 wheels, some have 3 wheels, some have only 1 wheel. So is one half of 2, or is it its own entity? I don't know. And is 4 twice 2, or is it just 1? It's hard to count.
Yeah, and that brings up the subject of mental health. Just kidding.
I do love the theory, the N plus 1 theory.
Yes.
That the appropriate number of bicycles is N plus 1. I have also heard it, and I don't know, maybe you're the one that told me this, but it's also S minus 1, S being spouse, and minus 1 number below that before they would leave you.
Speaking of reasons to leave you, this weekend, and it may be a little late for that, but is the bike swap on Saturday.
Yeah, by the time you hear this, that will be behind us.
But it is a thing, and you should start planning for next year.
But thinking of things in the rearview mirror, Al, did you go see Mrs. Doubtfire at Bexbrook Center?
No, I didn't make it to that. But I was at the block party.
Yeah, we should talk about that.
Yes.
Carrie, you were out of town.
She was there. No, I was there at the very beginning.
No kidding. How did I not run into you?
I rode a pike ride down, actually, because I knew with the block being shut down and it being Poor Richard's that it was going to be busy and probably lots of people looking for parking spots. So I rode a pike ride down, got there right at 2, and there were already 100 people probably milling around in the streets. But Al was almost the first person I saw.
Wow. And I got there at 10 after 2 because I thought the pizza was going to run out. So what we're talking about is a block party celebrating the passing of the torch from ownership of Poor Richard's by Richard Scorman and his wife, Patricia Seator, to the new owners, Joe Cole and Sarah, how do you pronounce her last name? Bigot?
I don't know.
Bigow?
Gilbow? I'm not sure how to say that half of her last name.
Yeah, but
we'll have to figure it out before next week.
Yeah, we're going to find that out in the next episode. We're going to get to know them in the next episode of Loving the Springs. But anyway, Poor Richard's is such an institution.
There we go.
So fun.
And Richard Scorman is really, the legend in his own time. He's been behind so many good things that have happened in town, and I won't run through them all now, but they certainly ran through them at this event. So they actually, I was shocked that they closed down a block of Tejon Street.
That was nice.
On a Sunday afternoon.
50 years of being part of the community, a significant part of the community. And I think John Weiss captured a lot of the old times because they did really get their starts together at about the same time. And that was neat to see. And then Mayor Yemi was there and they passed the torch, which was nice. An actual torch.
They really did.
It was great. Lots of live music. And they really put that together fairly quickly. You know, once they announced the sale was going through, I think it was less than 3 weeks. And normally when you want to close a street down, it doesn't happen that fast. So I think the fact that it was Richard really made some strings be pulled more easily to get all of that permitting done in time to be able to throw that event.
I heard that John Weiss and the Catalyst Fund played a big role in making this happen. And I learned a little bit about the Catalyst Fund, which is a fairly new nonprofit based in Manitou, that one of the things that they're trying to do is help local businesses, you know, stay local. And like Poor Richard's, that apparently they had a hand in making it possible for Joe Cole and his wife, Sarah, to purchase Poor Richard's. And they have their eye on Old Town Bike Shop because John Crandall's not getting any younger.
That's great.
Yeah, preserving the legacy of long-term local businesses who have had a community impact and making sure we don't lose that just because there's not an easy handover or way to purchase it. I think it's very cool.
Yeah.
You think of those two businesses in particular. And again, when we go back to 51 years of Poor Richard's and really what it's meant to the community, and John Crandall and Old Town Bike Shop are the same way. You think about how much has been brainstormed and hosted over there. And I mean, John was one of the very first people that I met in town that knew anything about solar panels and powering his business with alternative forms of energy. Mm-hmm. You know, talk about someone who bikes to work. I mean, well, I don't know the last time John's been in a car, but even just what a community center Old Town Bike Shop is. He was always at all of the old New Belgium rides that started
always
at McCabe's.
As a mechanic, as a volunteer mechanic.
I mean, it's just one of those hubs of the community that were we to lose it would really leave a giant gaping hole.
Mm-hmm. So shout outs to Richard Scorman and Patricia Seator. A shout out to John Crandall and Old Town Bike Shop for sure.
Yeah.
And a shout out to John Weiss. Thanks, John, for what you're doing for this community. I thought that he was kind of going to be
a Manitoid.
Well, I thought he was going to be a Floridian and that we weren't going to see much of him after he unloaded that short-term newspaper, The Indy.
And they were wearing
that only lasted 30 plus years.
They were wearing shirts that say Tubby's Turnaround. So I assume, I don't know, they're doing something with that.
Well, and speaking of Old Town Bike, I believe we could do a little call out here. Like, if you've ever wanted to own a bike shop, you know, I don't know that there's a person in line yet that is ready to take that over, but I think they're looking for that person or those people that maybe want to make Old Town part of their next chapter.
And if it's anything like Poor Richard's, applications are being taken.
Right.
You have to apply.
Maybe we should talk to John first.
Yeah, see what he has to say about it. But Carrie, you know the other John Weiss. You worked for that guy for a little while.
21, 22 years, you know, did a little stint with him.
Uh-huh. Do you have anything nice to say about him?
I am so grateful to John. He gave me the opportunity to have the career and the life in Colorado Springs that I do today. And I can't imagine how different my life would be had I not basically grown up at the Indy.
Oh, yeah. Can't imagine. Yeah. Quite an institution.
Yes.
I think I'll put a link in the show notes to the Gazette photos of that block party because, Al, I think you must have been photobombing. You were in several of those photos.
I was just there.
You and a stack of pizzas.
I was close to the pizza.
There was one photo that had Steph Vigil, Juliet, and Al Brody. Everybody who's anybody was down there. So speaking of things that are going on downtown.
Something pretty exciting is we're getting into farmers market season, and I really dislike grocery shopping, and so I love the fact that we actually have farmers markets with produce and bread and food at it, because keeps me from having to actually go to the grocery store. So we've got two in downtown this summer. One is starting May 10th, and it goes through October 25th. So that's the Sunday market in Acacia Park, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And last year, it was only every other Sunday.
Yeah.
And it was packed down there. Like, Acacia Park felt like a carnival almost. So yeah, starting May 10th, Sunday morning, get up, walk down, bike down, scooter down to Acacia Park. They have produce, baked goods, handmade products. They're going to have music. It should be a really fun way to spend your Sunday mornings. Go over there and then maybe pop over to one of the restaurants, have some brunch, do some shopping. It's a great way to spend your Sunday. And then starting on June 17th, which we're still a month out, which is a Wednesday, the Colorado Farm and Art Market is moving locations to the Meanwhile Block.
No kidding.
So the Meanwhile Block is that cool little collection of basically warehouses across Cimarron from the soccer stadium. Mm-hmm. So every Wednesday, starting June 17th through October 21st, 3 to 7 p.m., fresh food, local art, open mics, art walk, live music. So two opportunities to really, you know, engage in your community, pick up some groceries, pick up some handmade goods, spend some time downtown. Really, really excited about both those.
How did it become the Meanwhile Block?
That's actually a really cool story. Lauren Ripko, who is a local, she's probably most known for being a local events organizer. Her resume is way bigger than that, but she's put on some really awesome events. I believe it was a grad school project that she had proposed. And that's a block that Norwood Development Group owns. And it's that group of buildings. And they were kind of just abandoned and sitting there. And eventually they're going to develop it. But in the meanwhile, this proposal was to activate that block so it didn't just sit there empty, especially being right there in the middle of the Olympic Museum and the soccer stadium, like stuff going on all around it. So in the meanwhile, they've activated these buildings, and what they're mostly used for are various events. So there's three or four buildings over there that you can rent out to have a fundraiser. One year, the chamber had their gala in one of them. There's the one that's called the shop that's, I can't remember what the little cross street is, but it used to hold a couple little retail shops that have since moved out. But they've done that up where you could have like a wedding rehearsal dinner inside. They're so cool. I mean, if you can think it, you can do it in these various buildings. And then there's the outdoor space. One year they had a food truck lot out there for a while, but it is so cool. The Meanwhile Block does have a website. We can link that in there as well that gives you all the information of stuff that's already going on there. But it's one of those places that, yeah, you want to throw some kind of interesting event, whether that's a wedding, a birthday party, a farm and art market, a holiday market. There's a place to do it at the Meanwhile Block.
So cool. And yeah. I heard it here first.
Al, don't you think they should have just raised those buildings and turned it into a parking lot?
No.
Isn't there a song about that?
Come to think of it.
Yeah. Put up a, yeah.
What a great concept. Good to hear about that. I think that's a great spot for the farmer's market, too. I look forward to checking that out on my bike.
Yes, on your bike. And you're talking about Ride of Silence. a totally somber experience.
Yeah, we should talk about that. Yeah.
What is that? I haven't heard of that.
It happens May 20th this year, and I think it's been going on for about 7 years. It's an international bicycle ride, and it commemorates cyclists who were killed and also supports those who were injured while riding on public roads. And the idea is that it will raise awareness among motorists, the public, and decision makers of the dangers that cyclists faced on the roads, especially from other traffic.
Wow.
It's a night ride,
yeah.
An evening ride, so lights are appropriate. It's a somber ride, so there's no speaking, no talking. It's definitely a different experience.
Yeah, and here in the Springs, the ride starts at City Hall. It's being organized by Colorado Springs Cycling. It's just an 8.5 mile long ride, and they keep it to 8 to 10 miles per hour. They try to keep all the riders together, so you don't have to be an advanced rider. No spandex required.
That's kind of a riding moment of silence.
Yeah.
Wow. I wish I was in town.
Yeah, sorry, you'll miss that. But 6 p.m., people start to arrive and sign waivers. And at 6:45, they'll have some remarks for about 15 minutes,
mm-hmm.
including a rite of silence poem. And then 7 to 8 is the ride, or 7 to 8:30. By 8:30, everybody will be back at City Hall. So I think most of it would be in daylight. But yeah, I wouldn't want to be riding at that time of day without having lights at the ready.
In 2015, the state of Colorado adopted Vision Zero, or towards Goal Zero, which was zero traffic fatalities by 2050. And since 2015, things have gotten much worse. So as cyclists, it behooves us to understand how serious it is when you do ride, and just remember that, yeah, it's worth the risk. But there's a risk, and it'd be nice if everybody thought about that and hopefully reduced the risk.
Yeah, I've been bicycling more and more, and that has made me a much more cautious driver. You know, I really mm-hmm. watch for bicyclists, and I appreciate how there are some times when you're passing a bicyclist who may be in a bike lane, but because of oncoming traffic and the way the road's designed, you can't move over. And how many feet are you supposed to give them?
In Colorado, it's 3 feet.
3 feet.
And that is not measured from the center of your car to the center of the bike. It's measured from the extreme yeah. end of your right rear view mirror, side view mirror, to the extremity, usually the shoulder or elbow of the cyclist. In Wyoming, a neighboring state, that minimum is 5 feet.
Wow.
And if you've experienced 3 feet, when the car is going 40 miles an hour faster than you, it feels really close.
Yeah, it feels dangerous. I find myself wishing that especially those 3-ton pickup trucks would, you know, at least just slow down a little bit when they can't pull away from me. And so I really am a lot more cautious.
And again, it's the mirrors. So the pickup trucks that have the trailer towing mirrors, it's not the width of your pickup truck. It's where that mirror is. So if you've poked it out 2 feet, you got to remember that's 2 more feet you have to give that cyclist.
When you get into that vehicle, you're at the wheel of a killing machine, potentially.
True.
I mean, it doesn't take much for it to just crush the bones of a
and
bicyclist.
And cyclists can figure out how to kill themselves on their own. They don't yeah. really need any help at all.
And pedestrians, too. We got to look out for pedestrians.
Yes.
Moving right along.
If you were around downtown Colorado Springs last year, around August, we had something called Weenies and Teenies. And it was a 2-week passport where you could work your way through about a dozen downtown restaurants.
Do tell. Did you get all 10?
I did not.
Woo.
My coworker Kelsey and Matt Schnipper did. And the cool part of it was actually the very first day of the passport, we had one person who checked in at 9 of the 10 places. And the only reason she didn't get all 10 was the 10th place was a little bit confused and didn't have their weenies in a row.
Not that she couldn't handle another martini.
But she and her partner did 9 hot dogs and 9 martinis that day.
Was this your idea?
It was not. It was our marketing manager, Kelsey Swen. And it was awesome. It came with a full disco ball shaped hot dog. We had a kickoff party and everything. It was a blast. So what we heard in our post weenies and teenies surveying from participants was they wanted a tacos and tequila passport. And so they asked and we listened. So starting on May 15th and going through May 31st, we are launching the first Tacos and Tequila Passport downtown. It's a free digital passport you can download at downtowncs.com/tacos. And then that passport basically links you to these 10 downtown restaurants that are doing a specialty taco and tequila drink pairing during these 2 weeks. You can just order the taco. You can just order the tequila drink. You can order them both. And when you check in at the various places and order, you get points attached to this passport. And then you can win prizes like super cool glow-in-the-dark tacos and tequila drink stickers, gift cards, subscriptions to Side Dish with Schnipper, as he is one of our two sponsors. We also have the SoCo Insider as a sponsor of it. But, I mean, we have a lot of taco restaurants downtown.
Yes, we
but
do.
We've got people playing that aren't your traditional taco restaurant. So you can start your tacos and tequila 2 week with us on Thursday, May 14th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Golden Hour, which is in the Mining Exchange, who happens to be one of the participating taco and tequila businesses. So we're going to do a little kickoff party. We'll have live music. You can pick up an early sticker there. One day early, get to try their taco and their tequila drink. So super excited about that. And then the actual passport kicks off the 15th through the 31st. And we've got Colorado Craft Social participating downtown, the Golden Hour, Icons, and Icons was our kind of kickoff party for Weenies and Teenies last year. Mm-hmm. They are actually making a sweet taco. So a sweet taco and a Starlight espresso. So like an espresso martini with tequila. Ooh. Jack's Fish House. I mean, tell me you ever thought about getting a taco at a fish house. I mean, fish tacos are great too, so don't get me wrong. Latin Social, Red Gravy, T-Birds Tacos and Tequila, The Brit Pub, Wobbly Olive, and Zocalo. So those are all the restaurants that are participating. Every one of them has a different mix. Zocalo is doing a Palisade Peach Margarita. So this is just going to be a really fun way to kind of kick off your summer, explore some restaurants downtown that maybe you have or haven't been to, and get tacos at places that certainly wouldn't normally make them.
So I'm hoping downtowncs.com has the place to go to learn more, to find the map. Or
downtowncs.com/tacos. That'll be where you can download your free passport that then has all the information. And so we hope you come down and check out some downtown tacos and tequila.
Try not to have tequila at every place in one outing.
You got to keep up with that teeny, the martini woman.
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
I got a plug for the new United States Air Force Academy Hosmer Visitor Center.
Finally opening.
It is. This destination is the culmination of the City for Champions initiative that transformed Colorado Springs with iconic projects like the UCCS Hybel Sports Medicine and Performance Center. If you haven't been there, which I haven't been there, the Colorado College Ed Robson Arena, the Wiedner Field, and the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Museums. So this is the last of those projects. And together, they're supposed to significantly help Colorado Springs as far as tourism goes. So go out there and check it out.
Grand opening, May 16th.
That's it.
And it's free to go in there. And it looks like it's practically a museum.
And guess what? If you get on the Santa Fe Trail, you can ride your bike right to that visitor center.
You can. And if you're tired, you can stop just before it into the hotel and get one of your martinis or margaritas or tacos and use a flight simulator. If you haven't been, you can fly an F-16 simulator at that hotel right adjacent to the visitor center, which is a pretty slick thing to do. It's not free, but it's real.
Very
simulator.
Cool.
Simulator. Yes.
Cool.
If you want to have some fun in Colorado Springs, there you go.
I'm going to plug one more event that's coming a ways out, but want people to start thinking about it. And we did get tickets on sale. I am part of a volunteer organizing group for this summer's local Colorado 150, United States 250 celebration. It's called United We Rock. It is a beer, music, and spirits festival held at Rockledge Ranch on August 1st, which is Colorado Day. It's going to be from 2 to 8 p.m., a full day of live music. We've got 6 bands scheduled already. We've got 18 confirmed breweries participating, 3 confirmed distilleries. There's going to be food trucks there. It is a fundraiser for Rockledge Ranch, so all of the money that's raised over and above expenses is donated to Rockledge Ranch to continue all the cool heritage work that they do out there. There will, of course, be areas for kids. It is a family-friendly event. So despite the fact that it's a beer festival, we're saying family-friendly, not family-focused, because, of course, it's beer and live music all day. But I hope people come out for that. So if you are a Facebook or Instagram person, check out United We Rock. All the information about who's playing, who's pouring, our lovely sponsors, and how to get tickets for that. So come celebrate those anniversaries coming up August 1st, which is, again, still a ways out, but start getting tickets so they don't sell out before you snag them.
Rock on.
Easy to access on a bicycle, too.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Colorado Springs City Council approved a resolution authorizing the acceptance of approximately 100 acres of land known as the Pikeview Quarry. So if you grew up with G.I. Joe, as I did, you know that having a scar is something you should wear proudly. So we have a scar, and it has been reclaimed, I guess is the term, to make it look less scarish. And it has the potential to turn into something. So if we ever get enough funding for parks efforts, that has potential. And there is a public process to decide what is going to go into that property.
And so that is the kind of glitch you see on the mountainside, right? Yeah, as you drive.
If you know where the Air Force Academy is.
If you're driving home from the new visitor center,
you can still see it. You can still see it. But it's an unnatural look, but it's not an ugly look. They have regrown grasses, I guess, at this point. So
it's getting better.
It is.
Yeah. So there's a chance that there's going to be quite the mountain biking park on the side of that mountain.
That's one of the plans. And it definitely has what most people are looking for in extreme mountain biking is vertical.
So this has been one angle on the news, which is really a lot of fun news. But we'd like to end each episode that we can with a visit from Hala Irshadi of the Pikes Peak Bulletin to share with us some other interesting news that they're reporting on. So that is next. But don't go away, because after that, I have a few extra little goodies to share with you. So we're not quite finished. So joining us at the table now is Hala Irshadi, managing editor of the Pikes Peak Bulletin. And you said something earlier today that I think is just really a great description. I think you said that we publish stories that you probably won't read anywhere else.
Yes, I would say that is what makes us different. There's a lot of good news happening locally, but you know, every newsroom is understaffed, underfunded. A lot of places are trying to do daily news, and that just means they do what they do. So we look at what news is happening locally and look for the gaps, look for the stories that aren't being told. And sometimes that often includes investigative pieces. We've been doing more and more of that. So yes, those are the stories that we do to fill the gaps in the local news ecosystem.
So thanks for doing that.
Thank you.
What have you got to share with us today in the world of investigative reporting and news that you won't see anywhere else?
We have 2 stories that we've put out recently related to immigration and customs enforcement activity locally. One is a story about, we are aware of 3 instances where it appears that ICE has targeted people leaving the courthouse, which per state law, they are not supposed to do. But we have 3 credible accounts where it appears that this has happened. We're not able to get comment from ICE. They never responded to requests for comment. But I do believe that's an important story. We also have another story that is a follow-up to an earlier one. We reported a few months ago about a local Army veteran, Mel Flores, who was facing 3 misdemeanor charges for allegedly obstructing ICE. Flores is a confirmer with the Colorado Rapid Response Network, which means that he responds to calls of potential ICE activity, goes out, confirms whether it is in fact ICE so that the public can have accurate information, and offers legal and humanitarian resources. resources to people who are affected. Back in October, he was called out to a site and saw known ICE agents who were conducting surveillance. And he, by his own account, honked, called out, "Hey, ICE is here," alerted people in the area to their presence, and then followed the agents in their car with his own car for some miles. So those charges were dropped as part of a plea in a separate case. He pled guilty to obstructing a passageway, which is a petty offense. It's less than a misdemeanor. And that was related to a protest that occurred in January following the shooting and killing of Renee Good by an ICE agent in Minneapolis. There was a local protest that involved walking down roadways in the downtown area. And he did plead guilty to that and had to pay a little bit more than the $100. So not a huge fine. And as part of that plea, the misdemeanor charges were dropped.
That's interesting. The Emergency Response Network, the reason that they try to alert people there's ICE activity is, I guess it would be one thing if they were just concerned that people who were undocumented and illegally here were being warned to stay inside and hide. But the truth is ICE is disrupting the lives of a lot more people, especially everybody who's black or brown, right?
You know, I see this instance as occurring very much in the context of other things that were happening at the time. A lot of people go into law enforcement to serve and protect, and it very well could be that the ICE agents that were in their car at that time had that mindset. And Mel Flores, an Army veteran who has said that he joined the Rapid Response Network for the same reason that he joined the military, which was to serve and protect. Mel Flores is also coming to this situation with these good intentions. However, this is taking place in a context where there's very serious concerns about due process. There's concerns that they're not getting the worst of the worst. They're getting people who maybe have an asylum case pending, and they're in that, they're not legal, but they're not, they're in that gray area. So there's all of this national context of concerns about ICE, absolutely fed by their lack of transparency. And you got to remember, this was happening just a few months after a number of men were deported to the notorious Seacott prison without due process. Abrego Garcia, again, you know, there was that whole controversy where he was deported despite a court order. So Mel Flores is acting in this context.
So, yeah, ICE has kind of brought it on themselves.
Arguably.
Well, ICE is acting the way you would expect an organization to act. So what gets rewarded gets done, and what gets measured gets managed. And their task, their goal, I believe, was a certain number of people per week, per month, whatever they're being measured by. So when you give somebody a number to achieve, like parking tickets, you're going to get as many as you ask for, but it may not be the most critical ones.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we could adjust. And I think most Americans that I know do want to see the worst offenders, the drug dealers, the violent offenders taken off of the streets, sent back. But they don't want their neighbor who's working a job that's putting their roof up or doing something like that. They don't want them yanked off of the roof while the roof's getting done. And that's what's happening. And I think that's hopefully the focus that we change, that we don't just, we don't want ICE at all. And I think it comes off that way, as opposed to we want ICE to do what ICE should be doing and not just shotgunning everything in front of them.
Well said.
Well, to your point, I think that's a pretty common sentiment. We want law enforcement, right? Mm-hmm. But we also want to know that it is being done in a way that really serves the public good.
Yes.
Yeah. We want everyone's rights to be respected. Everyone
Absolutely.
Has rights. Yeah. You've also got an interesting story, an update on that contamination business.
Yes. This is a story that's actually a follow-up to some older reporting. I really couldn't have done it without the stories by Pam Zubek that were in the Colorado Springs Independent. I went to the Pioneers Museum, and they were very graciously got some images of those for me to read and use for this reporting.
And that's a new story for another day that you had to go to the museum to see those stories.
Well, we've touched on that in this podcast before, so I thought it was a relevant point.
Yeah.
So the story that we put out recently, which is about cancer-causing contaminants still remaining not cleaned up almost 6 years after a lawsuit ordered them to be, it dates back to 2013 when the nonprofit Smokebrush filed a complaint with the district court saying that they had been harmed by the migration of contaminants from a neighboring property. At the time, Smokebrush was housed in the Trestle Building, and the city property that was adjacent to theirs was on Cimino Drive. So these properties are roughly across the street from America the Beautiful Park in downtown Colorado Springs.
Now, what's the source of the contamination?
The city property was the former site of a coal gasification plant. That was in operation, you know, roughly a century before this lawsuit took place. It was originally in private hands. It was used primarily for street lighting, some other energy uses, but mainly street lighting. And then when Colorado Springs Utilities came into existence, they took ownership of it. They operated the plant for a time and then transitioned to other means of energy production. But coal gasification leaves some pretty nasty chemicals in the soil and groundwater, and that is what happened here. And there was an expert witness in the case, Michael Kosnet, long list of bona fides, who said in an affidavit that the Trestle Building site posed a risk to public health, and it was from this coal gasification site on this adjacent property. There was a lawsuit settlement in July of 2020 that awarded $500,000 to the plaintiffs and ordered the city or the successor in interest, meaning like whoever took over ownership of the property, to work with the state health department on a voluntary cleanup plan and aim to have their application approved within 1 year. Well, a records request to the state health department showed that there hasn't been any motion on that. And these voluntary cleanup plans, they really do rely on the property owner taking initiative and engaging in the process. The health department said that it doesn't have any immediate concerns about the property. That would be the 25 Cimino property. But they also don't have the regulatory authority because the contamination level didn't meet a certain threshold to step in and say, we need to figure out exactly where this contamination is. And also, the city doesn't own the property anymore. A handful of months after this lawsuit settlement happened, the city and Norwood Development Group did a land swap. And it was widely hailed as a very good thing for the city. The city got a property that they could do some stormwater management, help keep water clean, some other public goods, and Norwood Development Group, which is, for those who aren't familiar, a large and quite powerful development group in Colorado Springs, they took this contaminated land on which the cleanup was estimated to be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And, you know, they have the kind of pocketbook that can produce that sort of money.
And they took that land on knowing about that, and there was no, and the city was able to unload that. It became Norwood's responsibility.
Correct. Huh. And the negotiations on the land swap were occurring at the same time the lawsuit was moving its way through the courts. But a question I posed to the state health department and to the city was, well, we have documentation that the city, in a city document, says they're aware of this contamination in the groundwater and the soil, and that it extends about 150 feet south. And in this document, it says, well, we don't think that it's going west of Cimino Drive, which is where America the Beautiful Park is. We believe the groundwater runs in a north to south direction. Well, the property that was affected by the contamination and the plaintiffs won $500,000, that's north of the city site. So at some point, those contaminants were moving in the opposite direction, and groundwater is not static. It can shift around. So my question was, do we know America the Beautiful Park is okay? And I was told they are not worried about that. But there are some gaps in the knowledge base. So can they say with 100% confidence? No, but they are not worried. The experts feel like that's okay. However, what we do know is the contaminants that were the subject of that lawsuit that you know, the plaintiffs won $500,000 for, those are still there. They haven't been cleaned up. And we do know that an expert witness went on the court record and said that the trestle building property was a threat to public health, and that has not been cleaned up either.
So whoever gets the concession for hazmat suits for kids at America the Beautiful Park could make a killing.
And tin hats.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like it's worth noting, too, that this legacy of industrial activity, it's everywhere. We just happen to know about this one because there was a lawsuit. You know, there's things like that all over the place, and often we just don't know what sort of chemical soup we're living in.
Too true. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also do want to add that right now, the health department is not worried about the 25 Cimino property because it is capped. And Norwood is the master developer for an urban renewal area that includes those properties. That's part of why it was hailed as a good thing, because they're sort of tasked with redevelopment of it anyway. And I was not able to get a hold of Norwood. They did not respond to numerous attempts to get comment, but there could be development in the future. And at that time, I would think the remediation would happen. But it is still, I think, worth noting on the public record that a lawsuit nearly 6 years ago said, hey, this is really a problem and it needs to be cleaned up. And it hasn't been.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you're intrigued by these stories, the place to go is?
That would be PikesPeakBulletin.org. We put out unique stories regularly. You can sign up for our emailed newsletter and get our stories straight to your inbox once a week.
Hayla, you're a champion and we appreciate all that you're doing.
Yes, we
do. Oh my goodness. Thank you all so much.
As we close, every guest, you know, we ask them what they love about the Springs. Do we need to do that on this one?
I think
we talk about that all the time.
Yeah, and since I asked the question, I'm going to ask you, what do you love about the Spring?
You know, being at the block party on Sunday for Poor Richards, that reminded me, I think, what I appreciate most about the Springs. Sure, I love the mountains and the great outdoors that we have access to, but I really love the community here. I really feel like it's home. Like if I'm out there downtown on a nice Sunday afternoon, I know I'm going to run into people who I know me, who I love, who are doing great things. And a day doesn't go by that I just don't run into somebody who is just, you know, a model citizen doing good for this community. So I love the sense of community we got.
Well said.
I love that answer. And I think it is, as in the beginning when you said, you know, we're an odd mix, I think that is exactly why we all gel as much as we do. It is the exact conversation my coworker Kelsey and I had yesterday. We were walking around downtown handing out posters and stuff for a bunch of the events we have coming up. And we ran into so many people we know. And I actually said that to her as we were getting down. We were on the one block that's kind of the parking garages on both sides. And who do we pass but Jill Gabler? And she was about the 50th person we'd seen out and about walking that we knew. And I looked over at Kelsey and I said, this is what I really love about downtown in particular. As soon as I walk out of our office and I'm on the street, it is inevitable that I run into multiple someones that I know. And they're always like, stop and chat, at least give a wave. It really makes you feel like you live in a small, connected town versus a 700,000 person city. And I really love that too.
Yeah. Let me interrupt before you go, Al. That kind of related to what we've been talking about. At that block party, I ran into Carlos Perez. Mm-hmm. You probably both know him.
Sure.
I hadn't seen him in quite a while. He issued a challenge to me. He said, don't forget Briargate, you guys.
Okay.
That is challenging. You know, we don't promote Briargate a lot.
Well, we don't promote
a downtown.
Lot of the neighborhoods in the Northeast.
Yeah. Don't forget Banning Lewis Ranch. We do tend to promote Manitou and downtown more.
For me, I think a lot of it is places I can get on my bike.
Yeah.
And really, like last weekend, I rode from home to the block party, from the block party over to Westfax Brewing, which is in old Colorado City. Then I got on a scooter, scooted to my friend Jake's house because I wasn't sure where the closest pike ride stop was. Scooted from him to Cerberus because there was a pike ride stop, grabbed the pike ride and went back home. But that where I can comfortably ride for my social activity is kind of where my boundaries are. Yeah. And so I hear Carlos, I don't get out there very much. My town has shrunk very much to a 5-square-mile area.
But Al will tell us that there are ways to get to Briar Gate on your bicycle.
Oh, absolutely. With an electric bike and the trails, it's doable. But I'm totally with Carrie that this urban core is meant for not having a car. And once you get to Briar Gate, you're in an area that is meant to have a car. And it's more awkward to try to use the trail system through the far reaches of Colorado Springs. Not impossible, but it's just not nearly as convenient as riding here in the Springs, Manitou, and Colorado Springs downtown. So we do. Yeah, I echo what both of you said. It's the community. I had a chance to live literally anywhere when I retired, and I came here. And then I got cancer here, and I left for 7 years. And at the end of being on the road for 7 years traveling around, I wanted to come back here. And I do the snowbird routine in the wintertime, but I always want to come back to Colorado Springs because I love it here. And I love it because there is a community, and I can go to a block party and people know me from 25 years ago. I can't do that anywhere else anymore.
Aren't you glad you behaved yourself?
Sort of, yeah.
Well, lastly, I want to just put in a little plug about Studio 809 podcasts, so don't go away yet. I just want to let you guys know that we now have 15 podcasts in this collective, which is all oriented toward having a better informed and engaged.
And all because of you, and you deserve a lot of credit for that. So thank you, Dave.
Well, thanks. That's nice of you to say. I've sort of led it and wrangled it, but boy, there's a lot of hands, and I want to give a shout out to Sierra Guerrero, who's sitting in the corner of the studio today.
Go, Sierra.
Who's helped us set up the video today, and a lot of good people. And we're about to be 16 and soon to be even 17 podcasts. The newest one should be, if their first episode isn't already out by the time you're hearing this, it will be any day. And it is Spotlight El Paso County, Echoes of Culture, Voices of Today. And it's a collaborative effort of the Pikes Peak Diversity Council and the UCCS Black Student Union. I'm excited about having those diverse voices at the table here. And in the works quite a while has been the Sustainable Wedding Show with Maria Janae of Dreamcatcher Weddings. Mm-hmm. And she's into wedding season now, so I don't know whether that's going to delay the launch of that podcast.
One of our early guests.
That is right. That's how she found out about Studio 809. Yes. We'll put a link in the show notes to that episode.
There you go.
She was great. But right now, we've got Pedal the Springs, about bicycling in Colorado Springs, thanks to Tori Giffen and Buffalo Lodge, Making Democracy Work from the League of Women Voters of the Pikes Peak region. They do a great job of providing information that voters need and also trying to inspire more voter participation. Homeward Pikes Peak hosts A Place for Everyone about all issues related to people who are unhoused. The Area Agency on Aging comes in and records Aging with Altitude, which, hate to say it, it used to be I felt like I learned something I could do for my mom, and now I'm thinking I'm learning something about some service that I should be accessing. Very informative. Also fairly new to the table, Left Face from the El Paso County Progressive Veterans. Elevating Pikes Peak Women from Pikes Peak Women, and they've gone video now, so they're kind of ramping up and doing some really great episodes. Their most recent one, Jonna Reeder Claymeyer, the head of the Colorado Springs Chamber and EDC, came in, and they're doing a little mini-series about how can we disagree better, talking about civility.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, Cyber SITREP. We actually have a cybersecurity podcast, and these guys from Corvus Technologies and Digital Beachhead, they come in, and they're our best podcasters. They're better than we are. They are very entertaining and funny. And
we'll have to take some notes.
Yeah. And I mean, you learn something. They're not talking about cybersecurity for big businesses. They're talking about cybersecurity for small businesses and even individuals. And I always learn something. That's not everybody, but a sampling of some of the good things that are going on. And each of these podcasts you can find by searching for it wherever you listen. Or you can go to studio809podcast.com and shop around and find them. But I would just want to mention, we have expenses. So if you do visit studio809podcast.com, click at the top on Become a Patron and maybe pitch in a little bit to help us cover the expenses. And that helps us keep the cost of participating in this collaborative lower for all of these people that are doing good work and these, especially these nonprofits.
I love it. No matter what you're into, we've got a podcast for that.
Yeah. And if you think we're missing something, then that means you need to raise your hand and we'll give you the microphone. That's our job, is to give the microphone to good people doing good work. All right.
Great to be with you.
Smell you later.
Al and Carrie, I love you guys dearly. Thank you for doing this. And it's always good to sit here with you.
Absolutely. I'm happy to do it.
Feeling is 100% mutual.
In the Pikes Peak region, there's no shortage of activities. Whether you're experiencing breathtaking parks or magnificent works of art, if you're getting fashionable at a film festival, or fresh at a farmer's market, if you want to hear the sweet sounds of a symphony or the smooth shred of a Stratocaster, look no further than Peak Radar, your one-stop shop for all events in the Pikes Peak region, your free source for viewing and posting events. So no matter how you engage with our beautiful region, visit peakradar.com and get plugged into the peak.